It can be difficult to thrive as a new and emerging artist. Our goal with this project is to increase exposure of new artists in the community and to showcase and share the new talents of the region's population with the greater community. This project will make it possible for new artists who lack significant financial support to be showcased on the radio. By engaging a younger demographic, this ensures that the art, culture, and history will thrive in Minnesota.
You should introduce yourself to people listening.
Okay. I am Kid Uko. That's UKKO. Formerly known as the person built like a South Park character named Greg Pajari. Born and raised in Detroit Lakes, grew up in Duluth, moved back, met this guy. Went to college for a year or two in Moorhead, and then moved out to the cities to start doing the music thing. Mm-hmm. So that was nice.
So, what are your other names? You didn't always go by Uko.
Nah. Well, first I started off with Tubby Love.
Tubby Love. Right?
TUBBYLOVE.
Because you were a bigger kid.
Yeah, I was a big old boy. And so it was like a three-part choice to that. First it was like, well, because I was chubby kid. And it was also because me and my big brother was sitting around, you know, in a circle. And we were just ripping on each other. And he's like, if you became a rapper, your name would be Tubby Love. And I was like, if you were a rapper, your name would be Milky White. Because he was pasty. It's real pasty. But what I did was, because he taught me how to freestyle. What I did was like, all right, I'll take that name. I'm going to run with it. Took the name Tubby Love. Practiced for like 3 years. Got better at rapping than him and stuck it to him. And it's like, up yours, essentially. But then it was, when I decided to keep the name, it was because, oh, I don't want to hear those comparisons to Eminem. It's like, oh, well, Tubby Love is the exact opposite name of Slim Shady.
So <is true. laughs>
that worked out well for me. Then I had to switch it because there was a dude doing, like, indie alternative electric reggae named Tubby Love. Wasn't even fat. I was insulted. I thought it was appropriation a little bit of my culture, the chubby guy culture. So I switched it to Lavender Slim for a while.
I remember that.
I was making some college party tracks. I only made like 3 tracks under that name. I think you can only find 2 of them. If you dig real deep into SoundCloud history, you can find 2 of them with like 150 plays each or something. Oh,
wow. Well, that's something. It's more than
yeah.
I got.
And then I was like, all right, maybe I can get away with going back to Tubby Love if I changed the Y to an I. That was not realistic. I don't know why I thought that would work. Never got a cease and desist letter, but, like, the guy, like, mentioned that, like, he was a person to me. And I was like, well, I knew you were, but I didn't say that. So I spent about a month thinking about a new name, just didn't do any writing while I was thinking of that. And I thought, like, Uko, I'm very Finnish person. My family... They're indentured slaves to the Russians before they came over. Uh-huh. They escaped, took the boat over here. So I wanted to do something to represent that culture. And it's like, Uko is the Finnish god of the sky and the weather. He's like essentially the Thor of Finnish mythology.
Interesting.
He carries a big old battle axe and stuff. And he was also said to be the leader of the music circles and like the poetry circles. So I thought that was kind of a cool thing. And Uko, modern day Finland... is what they refer to old men as. So it's like Kid Uko is like young man, old soul type of thing.
Yeah. Interesting.
But I gotta get t-shirts with like the pronunciation on it. It's like, Kid Uko. It's like, no. Never works out well.
I'm gonna be honest.
It's more about Uko.
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 All right. I'm gonna be honest. I remember seeing it and I had no idea how to pronounce it when I first saw it.
Uko wouldn't be a bad one either. I rap about some pretty foul stuff every once in a while.
This is true.
We have my group, Ukrainian Shambles, we have several songs that we couldn't say the name of the title of
fair enough.
On the radio, so I won't bring them up. But yeah, it's been in like a quarter of that stuff, quarter emotional, quarter just trappy stuff, and then just like parody tracks.
Cool. So... You said your career in Shambles. So that's your group. How long have you been in that group?
I've been in that group, I'd say about 4 years. The first time we ever met, I was coming up here to see Tanner Yoakum. He was doing a charity show with Theta Chi fraternity over at Hamlin. And I met Jocelyn. She was there.
Jocelyn.
McClinsky.
Okay.
Formerly Joe. She's recently came out as you know, transgender, working on that thing, so that's cool, full support for her. But I met her, and I did a little freestyle thing. I was supposed to do a full set, but the cops came and busted it up 30 seconds before I was supposed to go on. So didn't get to do that, but she hit me up on Facebook. It's like, here, I'm going to email you these three beats, and I was like, all right. I came down a half year later, recorded three songs. Two of them were original. The first one original recorded was Blitz, and we also did a remix of Tupac Back. We did Midwest Back. That was a pretty fun one. And then we just liked the chemistry, so about a year later, we finished our first project, Darkroom Sessions, which was an EP about 9 tracks long. We came up with the name for that, same way we came up with the name for the group and everything else we came up for the name with. We just like, all right, we're going to go sit around by ourselves, think of the most ridiculous things we can come up with, write them down, and then we got in the car on the way to the studio. It's like, all right, well, I got like 20 of these, you got 20 of these. And Von Vitti, Jocelyn McClinsky, her stage name, she's like, Aurora, shoot for the win. I was like, no. She's no. Because that was around that time, so that was very poor taste. She was like, all right, how about Your Career in Shambles? And I was like, all right, yeah, I dig that. And then we named the first one Darkroom Sessions. There was about, so that dropped in like late 2011, I think. And then we did our second project, Trouble in Mayberry, which is kind of a play on the fact that we're just like a couple of white kids doing our Midwest spin on trap music. So we wanted to bring up the whole, we're both kind of nerdy people. We're like, oh, we'll go with the old school Americana thing for that. That was about 17 tracks, 3 skits. We got Tanner on one chorus.
Tanner Yoakum.
Yeah, we got him on a chorus there. He's actually now an official member of the group. He's only going to be on like 4 or 5 tracks of the new album, which is called Darkroom Sessions 2. We've been working on that since 2013. So we've been working on that for 3 years. And eventually we got to the point where we were recording like a month ago a couple tracks. And the video is like, you know what would be funny? Since we've been working on this one for 3 years, if we just came in at some point and just like did a mixtape in one day and dropped that before the album, so you're like, thank you for waiting, and then just put out a whole project. And we did. Mm-hmm. So that worked out.
Yeah, the mixtape, it was called January 4th.
Yeah. What we did for that, we went in at like 9:30 a.m. with like 2 big gallons of Caribou coffee, pack of smokes, and a couple fast food meals. And so we went in there. Vitti, she is an amazing person. This is one of the smartest people I've ever met in my life. She got a 95th percentile on her LSATs without taking any law classes.
Wow.
Which is crazy. She is currently at William Mitchell right now for law school, and she's working as a law clerk currently. She makes anywhere from 5 to 8 beats a week.
Wow.
Sometimes like 3 a day. And so she's just got this stockpile of hundreds of beats that we've never used. So we went in, picked a beat, wrote down the time we started recording, half freestyled, half wrote our verse. So we went hour, done, another one, hour, done, another one. And we just kept doing that. It was insanely brutal. I honestly, for the life of me, couldn't recite any of my lyrics for a full song on that. I have no clue. It was just so fast.
Yeah.
I feel like Ricky. Our boys trying not to swear in court.
Can you tell me a bit more about your style in regards to how you rap?
My style is kind of, so I started off where a lot of people in the white rapper genre sort of start off. There's just kind of a difference between like a white guy that raps, like say a Paul Wall, who's just the person that raps, as opposed to like a Slug or like a G-Eazy or someone. I started off as like, okay, well, because I'm this, I want to be really good at one thing in my lane. And for a lot of people, when they're coming up and first like trying to record tracks, they're like, oh, I want to be really fast. You know, I want to show that I'm really good. So I'm going to do this really fast thing. And I kind of got my inspiration for that style from like Andre 3000, like a mixture of Andre 3000, Slug, and Eminem. And so like, I was like, that's all I wanted to do. But then 2 years into recording, someone told me, is like, you really need to slow it down because like you've got great things to say, but you're packing like a million syllables into each song and you're not really getting by what you want to say. So I started listening to a lot more like Biggie and 50 Cent to try to perfect a slow flow sort of thing. And I worked on that for about 2 years, and it's gotten to a point where it's gotten like popcorn-y. It's kind of cool. I'm able to control my flow now to where I can have these speed bursts and then, you know, subtly meld it back into the slower flow and bounce back and forth between that.
Mm-hmm. Get like a cadence going between them.
Which is like, I'm not naturally rhythmic at all. So it's been just like, it was just 3 years just sitting there and sitting there and like, why isn't this working? Work, 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 until eventually just broke through the wall.
Sure.
Which is crazy.
Mm-hmm. So who are some of your, I know you mentioned some names there, like who are your biggest influences for your craft?
I'd say overall, as a whole, it's definitely Biggie. It's definitely Eminem. It's definitely Andre 3000. Those three guys and Deltron. 3030, Del the Funky Homo Sapien have definitely been the biggest inspirations to me. And they're the people I definitely, in the past, have always looked to for, like, guidance. When I'm about to write a song or if I'm about to do a show, that's what I'm playing. I'm playing Ready to Die. I'm playing Deltron 3030. I'm playing Marshall Mathers LP 2. But recently, I've been trying to get off, like, the gangster rap stuff, like, listening to that before I write songs. So I've been trying to, like, push more of a message, and not everything, you know, we still do the joke tracks, but lately I've been listening to a lot of Lil Dicky before I record, just to get in that funny zone. That guy's great. And a lot of J. Cole. I really like the way he's kind of take the Biggie style of storytelling and ran with it and made it, I don't use this word often, but filled with swag, so to speak. And it's just a really hot style he has, and it's kind of got, it gets me in the zone to be able to write punchlines into my story songs, which I hadn't been able to do previously. So that's what I've been looking to for guidance recently.
Why did you first decide to do rap?
Back in 96, when I was 4 years old.
Going way back.
Yeah. We lived in Detroit Lakes. It was my mom, my big brother, and my little brother had just been born. And we were living in Detroit Lakes with my grandma, Linnea, and my uncle Eric. And my uncle was still in high school, in Detroit Lakes High School then. And he was a pretty popular guy, so our house is kind of a party house. They'd go party there after school or whatever. And so I was four. I remember they'd always be partying, and they'd always be listening to, like, Dr. Dre, Biggie, Snoop Dogg and stuff. So that's just kind of what I grew up listening to through that effect, because they were just always there, and that's all they ever had playing. So I didn't, like, grow up listening to nursery rhymes and watching Elmo. I grew up watching Oz and listening to Biggie and Tupac and Dr. Dre. So it's just been... kind of since the start.
Yeah, a lot more mature content growing up.
Yeah. And then I remember the moment I really was like, I was like, I want to say seven, and we were in my basement on West Wallow over in those duplexes, you know, by Burgeons. Is that still Burgeons? I don't know. I'm assuming. But yeah, we were over there, and I was in the basement, and I heard the song Rock Bottom for the first time, and then I heard the song Brain Damage by Eminem, and I was like, that's insane. How do you even do that? Like, it was like gory. It's something I definitely shouldn't have been listening to at 7 years old, but I've been listening to those, and then it started to click, and then when I was around 10 or 11, I at first really listened to the song, like, Juicy by Biggie, and it was like, look at this, like, ugly, chubby, poor kid, like, doing his thing, slaying it, getting ladies, and, like, really telling his story, and, like, making himself a much bigger thing than he is. And I always thought that kind of empowerment through, like, words was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of clicked. Plus, my mom, when I was little, she used to write a bit of poetry. She read me poetry as I went to bed, and it just kind of sunk in.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So for you, it had to do with, in the Biggie instance, it had to do with him being this larger man in society.
Yeah.
And really just owning that identity and not really caring.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's like, growing up, like, poor, like, not like other people in general, you know, I'm assuming a lot of people have been through that. You know how that is when you're around, like, a bunch of white people and you're around a bunch of, like, light kids, you know, all working out at age six and stuff. You know those kids, the hockey hair and everything. I mean, like, the chubby, poor kid in, like, small town is, like, it's hard to find a form of empowerment or confidence. What hip-hop does for you, or any form of music, is it creates a whole... So here's normal life, and you can't find anything out of here. Here's this whole surreal world where you don't have to be that. You can pick up an instrument, you can, you know, pick up your pen, write raps and stuff, and all of a sudden it creates this whole other lane that wouldn't be there in your everyday life if you weren't a creative person. And you can take that, and you can very much, and not even in a sense of bravado, but kind of, because you kind of just, like, you can build the person you are through the intent of what you want to be. And that's a really... That's a really insane thing you can do with words that I've always held on to. I kind of built myself into a cool sort of person through being like, hey, that's what I'm going to do. And kind of, like, broken through barriers and barriers and barriers until I'm at, like, where I'm at now.
So it's like you use it more as a type of expression of who you want to be and who you feel that you are inside. And so you use rap to kind of express that to the outside world.
Yeah, it's very much so perception is reality. And if you really want to hone an image for yourself, you can make that happen through hip-hop. We've seen it, like, countless times, you know, rappers who may not actually be from the lives they are, they've taken that personification like Rick Ross has and just ran with it. And they're like, this is the person I am because I'm saying it. And after, like, years of doing that, you kind of create that mindset in your head to where it gets to the point where you just start living the way you say you are. And it's not so much a bravado anymore. It's just what you've become through saying that that's what you are. It's a... In a major way, it's a lot of egotism, but it's also, this is the kind of thing you need to do in life is take hold and be like, that's what I'm going to be and make it happen, whether or not it's true at the time.
Kind of like the manifestation of an identity.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
You touched on earlier your counterpart in Your Career in Shambles, Jocelyn?
Jocelyn, yeah.
Obviously, we don't have Jocelyn here to ask her about it, but how have you seen her change since you've met her?
It's been absolutely drastic. The change has been immense. When she first started making hip hop, she didn't listen to rap until 2008, 2009. She was in like cover bands and played all sorts of instruments. She didn't really listen to any rap. And then in high school, her second or last year, she picked up a 3-6 Mafia album. And so her first delve into hip-hop was at, like, 17, 18 with, like, Memphis trap music, which is a harder form of trap music, and it's also kind of play and a little jokey in and of itself. And so when she first started rapping, and her family has a bit of money, so that she had the means to set up her own recording studio. She's already recording stuff for a band. So she started making all these trap beats and, like, rapping really hard, you know, not kind of like her lifestyle was, or like how her voice was even. She even sometimes used a bit of a black scent. I don't know if that term is like PC, but
probably not.
But it's a thing. And I started working with her and she just rapped all these things that just wasn't her. But through working with me past 3 or 4 years, her style has changed so much to the point, especially with the transitioning gender, she's really came into being able to rap about her life. Cause it's always been hard for her because she's always had that block, like that, let alone everything else in life, going to law school, all this stuff. You know, there's always been that block of this is the person I am and I can't show it. And with breaking through that, she's become much more open rapping about her life and kind of going into her style and more speaking as opposed to putting on some sort of accent or charade.
So being more comfortable with who she is.
Absolutely. And she's also gotten a lot better with taking criticism. And so before, like 3 or 4 years ago, I'd be like, hey, can we change this thing on this beat? She'd be like, no, I made it, it's done. And it's gotten to the point, it's gotten, well, our chemistry has gotten so lovely that I'd be like, hey, make this beat. And she'd be like, all right. And she'll do that. And that's something that she wouldn't have done like 3-4 years ago. So she's definitely matured in her professionalism in studio as well as out of studio, and just as a person growing and showing more of herself.
So you think that's reflected in the work you guys have done?
Oh, absolutely. She's definitely rubbed off on me as well in that sense. When I came in, I was just trying to rap really fast. I was just trying to tell stories. I was just trying to either be political or be like really pissed off. And that's just an angry, poor guy sort of thing. That's the thing I was pushing. Couldn't write punchlines, save my life. Didn't have any flow at all. Didn't have any sort of voice on recording. I didn't know how my voice sounded, so it was just, the first couple of cuts were just terrible, and they took like 3 hours a song, at the very least, just recording like 8-16 bars, and through working with her for the past 4 or 5 years now, it's just, I found my voice on track. I've been able to work on my cadence as well as, you know, little subtle things like pitch changes that I'd never thought about prior. And then her style of writing, it's kind of switched. Her style of writing when we started, she'd write punchlines, put it in her phone. She'd read off punchlines, she'd put them together like a puzzle. I'd go in there, I'd have 16 bars written, and they'd just be filled and filled and filled. And by the end of it, by the time this mixtape came, she's been doing more writing because she's felt more power in the writing, and I've been slacking. I've just been doing a lot of punchlines lately because I've been working on those for like 2 years. It's like, well, you got to have some funny little, ooh, you know, that fire moment in the track where it's like,
fair enough. You've kind of been talking a bit about how your style has kind of evolved over the past few years. Like, how do you kind of get into that mindset for yourself that, like, you realize you can improve or that you should improve And how do you like pinpoint, this is what I'm going to work on, this is how I'm going to be a better rapper?
You got to be a student of the game. I know a lot of people who like listen to certain rappers and they'll be like, that's garbage, or they'll listen to them because they just hate them. And sometimes, I used to be the type of person where if someone was really good, I almost couldn't stand listening to them. It's like, why can't I do this? I hate this. I don't want to hear this. You know, get this out of my face. And then I just got to the point where I got more accepting of the fact that there are barriers to be broken. The best way to do that is to listen to the people that are better than you and take all of those people and kind of like, all right, I like this in this style. Not necessarily take it, but like, how could this affect my style to better me? And that's a lot of what it is just like, listening to the rappers that you look up to and to the people that are current, even your age, that you think are better than you, and be like, okay, why is this good? And then listen to a whole different type of rap, and why is this good? And then you can kind of take all these different genres and be like, why are these good? And kind of put them together and be like, why is this good as a whole for hip-hop? And then you just kind of hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of study to the point where you kind of got these things fixed in your head. You're like, all right, I know what's hot. I know why these people sound good. And through studying my own tracks, I know why these things of mine sound good and why these things don't sound good. And so it's just hours of work.
Sure. So one thing that like I wonder about is, for you as an artist, you know, to be successful, you need to get your voice out there, and a lot of people will be interested in it. And hopefully download some of it, and then maybe you sell some stuff. Go down that road. That's for a financial perspective. Mm-hmm. How do you navigate between artistic integrity, trying to tell a story that's supremely authentic to you, and trying to be commercially successful in some way?
That's a good question. I used to, our first two albums we put out, we sold them, you know, just because we were like, hey, we were kind of cocky. We were like, we're going to put this out. People will buy it. Nobody bought those things. Nobody bought those things. And it's like, well, after that, I just kind of stopped focusing so much on the commercial. And I was just like, I'm just going to perfect for a while. I'm going to sit here and perfect. But it gets to the point, once you get your music to the point where you're telling the stories you want to, it is very hard to get people to notice what you're doing if it's not made around shock value or made around new trendy things. You're not making songs about dance moves. You're not saying like, oh, I'm gonna do this to this person and really mess them up. Or you're not in like local beef, which is actually kind of a big thing in the Twin Cities these days. A lot of rappers are beefing. It's pretty petty. But it's weird trying to take this piece of your soul that you just want to express, and which is very much what the music is there for, and then be like, okay, well, let me put these ribbons on it and wrap it up in a different way so that people actually listen to it. And I feel like that and trying to figure out a social media presence are the hardest parts of being a hip-hop entertainer. It's just like trying not to compromise while knowing at some point you might have to if you want to be commercially successful. But with me, the last couple of years, I haven't had that mindset. It's always been, well, if I could work for some independent label, some underground label, if I could work for minimum wage the rest of my life making rap, I'd be completely fine with that. So I'm not as concerned about the commercial success as much as getting people to listen. Mm-hmm. I don't care if I gotta like go into your house and give you this and give you some cookies. It's like, listen to the album. Please do it. You know?
Yeah.
By any means necessary at this point.
So, yeah, so for you, like, the big thing is definitely just get your voice out there and let people hear what you have to say. Be able to express yourself. That's pretty cool.
Some of that comes with, I've been more open to making some party songs, you know, and I used to be very, very much so a backpacker in hip-hop. I was against party songs, didn't like dance songs, and I've kind of just growing as a person, realizing that it's all part of one genre, it's all part of one culture, and you shouldn't really look down on a certain style of that music because of what it represents. Like, not everyone wants to be thinking all the time and listen to music. It's like, I like watching comedies, I don't like watching thrillers, I don't like watching scary movies. I like to be entertained and made laugh. You know, some people just want to dance when they listen to music. And I've accepted that. And that's helped a little bit. Like, we made the funny songs that whose names I can't mention here. But we've been doing that to try to get it out to more people, get it playing at college parties. That's been kind of working.
Cool.
That's been cool.
You were talking a little bit earlier about beefs between rappers in the Twin Cities. Now, you don't have to give any names or anything like that, but like, Can you talk a bit more about beefs between different artists in the Twin Cities and like your feelings on that whole?
It's weird because what it is, it's a lot of rappers that aren't necessarily doing a lot that are like hating on other people because there's people doing slightly more than them or slightly less than them. It's insanely petty, like I said, and part of it is just like people calling people out for being false. You know, history of rap, that's been a thing forever. Like, you're not genuine. And part of it is just like people in Northside don't really like people in Eastside, and Northside rappers don't really like Eastside St. Paul rappers, and it's just kind of, and there's a bit to do with some gang click stuff, but like a rapper, his name I won't mention right now, he got a shot outside of a venue on Cedar Ave over in Riverside, which a lot of people thought was correlated with the fact that he was throwing a blood sign while he's on stage. And there were a lot of rappers from different areas at that show, and apparently some of them did not like that. And it's just like, it's essentially like these rappers look at like the big brother who's not the local guy, the national guy's out there. They're like, all right, well, I can't touch him. You know, I can't get any credibility off of saying his name, so I'm going to say little brother's name and see if I can kind of spark something. Like, MN Fats is a guy who I've seen has had, I don't know if he's responded to any of them because he's a little bit bigger than the guys that are trying to talk about him, but I've seen a lot of diss tracks made about that guy for just like no reason, you know, and it's just kind of, it's very odd. It's like, you're in Minnesota, it's cold, why are you upset? Smile, you'll stay warm.
True. For people who aren't as familiar with music in the Twin Cities, especially rap in the Twin Cities, like, who are some other artists that are out there?
Well, obviously there's Rhymesayers, there's Dem Atlas, there's Prof, there's Atmosphere, there's those cats. Some other cool cats, there's Spooky Black, he's a R&B singer. He does work with Bobby Raps and them. Those guys are crazy. This cat I've been doing a little bit of work with, we're going to be going and recording another song here soon named Create. I think he's changing his rap name here to Inhaler James soon, which I think is kind of a cool name. That guy is insane. I think he's got some of the best bars on the planet. There's a cat named X, who's another close personal friend of mine who I met a couple years ago through music, who has just got the most buttery flow I have ever heard in my entire life, and it's beautiful. It's absolutely gorgeous. There's those cats, there's this new group out, this cat named J-Lap, and this cat named Ty P. They're called Cram. They just had a show at the Caboose. They got like 300 people over there, so they're like packing it in.
Wow.
Those guys in particular are really crazy.
Do you get to collaborate a lot with other artists?
You know, it hasn't been as much in the last couple of years, but like this year and the year prior, I've been getting a little more into it. I've done a couple tracks with Create, Inhaler James, I said. I've more been in like different projects. So I've been working on this solo album. We've got the YCIS album. We've got the mixtape January 4th. And then I'm also, I don't know if you knew this, I'm also in a group with a woman by the name of Allie Madsen. And what we do, we've affectionately dubbed Ukrap. She'll sing and either play ukulele or guitar, and she'll do like 4-bar verses and choruses, and I'll do like 16-bar verses. And that group is called What's for Dinner. I just thought that'd be funny to be like, hey, so-and-so, we're What's for Dinner tonight. But we've been doing that for about 3 years now. We got 5 or 6 tracks I think we'll be putting out an EP sometime this summer, hopefully. So that's been really cool. I like just getting in, doing one song every once in a while. I did a couple tracks with my buddy Mo Ibram, who was rapping under Silent E at the time when I was living in Moorhead. But I really like, one track isn't enough for me when I'm trying to collaborate with people. I want to make a project. Because one track, anyone can cookie cut one track, throw it out, and you never know if the vibe's going to be on, even if it is, you know, you did one thing. I like getting in there, like, building a repertoire with people, and we're like, hey, let's make a couple tracks, let's get these out, and, like, kind of show that it wasn't just a, hey, come over at 1, we'll be done by 3, and then we won't hang out for 5 years type of thing. I like to, like, work with people I like and
create
do
a community.
Lot of work when I do, yeah.
Cool. Do you just perform, or do you do any of the, like, mixing as well?
Nah, my hands are stupid. I get music theory very, very roughly.
Mm-hmm.
Vidi has made every single beat for our projects, and I love her to death for it, and she does all the mixing and mastering. But on the flip side of that, I'm more of a performance guy. I'm more of a writing guy. I'll give her advice, do teeny, like, this line would work well. Like, not even ghostwriting, just like teeny little, like, here, do this, and that works
out well.
But, yeah. I'm getting better at being, like, I guess, a co-engineer. When we're mixing and mastering, I'm starting to understand how things sound and how they can sound better and what instruments would be better in what places. But that's been a long time coming for me. Mm-hmm. And that's just hours of studio time sitting there and looking over people's shoulders. That's not like delving into books or anything. I love to perform. Performing is by far my favorite part of hip-hop. I like getting on stage, talking to people, cracking jokes. That's my thing. That's where I feel most comfortable.
Has that affected how you feel about yourself or how you feel that your personality has shifted since you've kind of taken on this moniker and been on stage, maybe took on more of a presence?
Absolutely. So when you haven't played a song, when you haven't played a stage before, you always think you can get booed off stage and you do horribly. You know, those first couple of times, you think, oh, people are going to think this sucks. People are going to think this is whack. They're not going to want me up here. And then after you get through that first show and it's like, all right, no one booed. And you get through that second show and it's like, all right, people clap. And you get to that third and fourth show and it's like, people are knowing the words to these songs. They're like really digging it and like throwing their hands in the air and stuff. It's just like, it really builds you up as a person. Half in a conceited sense, because obviously it's blowing up your ego. But in another lane to that, it helps you work towards being a better person and like being that thing that people try to appreciate. Like for me, being on stage and like playing a good show, people come up to me, tell me how great I did, you know, songs are awesome or whatever. It makes me want to be like, all right, well, what effect can that have on me? I can be a better person. I can be what I put on stage and the joy I bring people through my music. I can see that and be like, well, what are ways I can incorporate that into just like how I treat people on an everyday basis. I find myself being kind of a kinder person, more laid back. I've always been an anxious person. It hasn't been so much since I started doing shows, and I feel like a lot of that is just like knowing, okay, if there's anything in my life that I don't have, I know I have this personification, I have this stage presence, and people like it when I entertain, and there's no reason I can't be doing things like that off stage. And not even just like make people like me, you know, it's like, it's not necessarily about being cool so much as, like, bring a little happiness to people. And that's definitely, I've had a complete paradigm shift of how I look at the world since I started doing shows. I used to be so angry. Little angry Cartman-looking dude. Around all sicked off for no reason. Now it's mostly smiles.
Cool.
And that's cool.
Before, you were very anxious. You're a very anxious person. And now you can go on stage in front of dozens of people or hundreds of people and perform this performance that you have written and you have worked on, and it's all coming from the heart. That sounds like something that an anxious person wouldn't do at all.
Yeah.
It's almost like you created this alter ego, much like how, you know, there's Peter Parker and there's Spider-Man or something like that. You have this other person who's always inside of you. He's a part of you. And you can bring him out and be this character that's larger than life, larger than, say, the previous or other version of you would dream of being sometimes. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's very much so like that. It's just Greg Pajari, pre-music and stuff, would never get on a stage and, like, say a bunch of things to people. You know, I was a kid. I'd say a lot when I was made to go to the podium in school, but I hated going up there. I hated having to say things to classmates because you're a little anxious person who's like down on yourself. It's like that's the last place you want to be in the spotlight. But it gets to a point when you're anxious, your anxiety, your intelligence, and your creativity, eventually there's going to be a battle inside of you. And a lot of what you let win in that will personify you as a person in your coming years and your adulthood, and like growing up. I was so anxious when I left preschool to go to kindergarten. I got so worried about leaving preschool that I was put in the hospital with anxiety sickness for like 2 weeks. I've had bags under my eyes since the third grade. Wow. It's just always been a terrible thing. But eventually it got to the point where it's like, well, I like doing this so much and I have too much to say to not say it. So I need to harness this and find a way to say it. And that meant getting over those first couple of shows and just going up there and like, I'm doing it. And it's gotten to the point where, and I should definitely focus on building my sets more again because I got a little sloppy with it, but it's gotten to the point where I can go up there and be like, all right, I'm just going to kind of pick the songs as I go. And the banter is very natural. It's very organic. The flow of the show is very organic. There's not any pressure anymore. I just go up there and do it.
You're comfortable.
Yeah. The anxiety is very much kept outside of the stage, which is another, along with, like you said, the persona. It's like there's that barrier. It's very thin right now because I'm getting cocky. I'm getting cocky with my progression, but there's this very thin barrier between Greg Pajari and Kiduko, and I make sure there's at least, like, the height of the stage difference between those two at all times.
Like, how do you do that? I mean, I know there's a lot of kids that have anxiety. I definitely have anxiety when I have to do any sort of public speaking or anything like that, and I think that's very common for people. And you clearly have or had anxiety. What was that like when you decided, okay, this is what I'm going to do, be a performer, but a big part of being a performer is you have to be in front of people doing that. How did you get through that? I'm sure there was like conflict, internal conflict with your body's like, oh, no way are we doing that.
A lot of it was just binge watching 8 Mile. No, not really. Liquor helps. what it really was is like, it got to the point where I was lucky enough where I had made maybe 3 or 4 songs that weren't garbage before I did my first show. I didn't do my first show until I was about 20, 21. I had the luck and the grace to have had a couple songs out that people had told me didn't suck. They had told me it was good. So that really helped to be like, well, I'll do these 3 or 4 songs that I already know some people like and pray to Jesus that the people I'm performing in front of like these. In my first show, I just set it up myself. I went to a dive bar. I was like, hey, I've never had a birthday party. I'm doing a birthday party / my first show here. Is that cool? They're like, yeah. And so the first one was very much in front of friends, and that helped. The second show was the scariest because I had maybe 2 friends there. There were probably like 40 people there, and I was insanely nervous. But the anxiety turns into adrenaline as soon as you get on stage. And it you can definitely see it in the first couple performances. It's like you're a little stammering, it's hard to keep your breath. But as you find yourself feeling accomplished, that, you know, that egotism played with, and you're just feeling good, that anxiety slowly but surely shifts to adrenaline. And instead of people are like, are you nervous? No. Are you anxious? Yeah, but I'm just really jacked up. And that's what it's gotten to, is just like it transitions so well. Anxiety turns into adrenaline really easy.
No, that's an important lesson for people.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Feel the rage.
Tell me a bit more about your writing method. I know you said that you created a couple of tracks before you ever decided to go on stage. Mm-hmm. So you had to write those. So what was that like, learning to write? And then how has that changed?
I started writing when I was like, I actually started writing raps when I was like 11. Yeah, I didn't do it often, and then I got really into it from 13 to 15. 15 to like 17, I didn't write a single track. I just practiced freestyling, because I was like, that's a thing. I don't want to be a fraud. I personally don't respect a rapper as much as they can't freestyle. It's not even like a hating thing. It's just like, well, if you love the craft, why wouldn't you try? Because that's the purest form of rapping. You know, it's like you're not sitting down building this bravado or whatever. But back to the writing thing, my writing style is insanely tedious, and there's no wonder why I've been going more with punchlines and freestyling lately, because when I do write, what I do is, I'll write a bar. Nothing that rhymes, it. I'll write a bar. I'll read that bar out loud several times until I think of another line. I'll write that line down. I'll rehearse that whole part, and I'll keep adding on, and every time I add a new line, I'll reread that out loud. So a song can take 15 minutes sometimes. Sometimes it can take 7 days. And it's just tedious. It's like, for some reason, it's just, I've fallen into that way where it's like, for me to write a good song, I have to constantly be editing it as I go. And the pitfalls of that is, it's before I started working on punchlines and freestyling more, it's harder to work under pressure. If I didn't have anything written in the studio, it was almost guaranteed going to be a 7-hour thing. But the positive is that after reading it so many times, by the time I finish writing a song, I have that completely memorized. And that definitely helps with performances. I'd never worry about it. I never have to read my writtens for like 3 days before I go on stage or anything like that. Because it's like, well, you just made yourself sit in a dark room and talk to yourself for 7 hours. I would surely hope if you ever did that with anything in life, you'd remember all of it after. And that's probably the only positive to it. Because there's so much self-critiquing that comes with editing that style when you're writing. You're like, okay, this bar, and you read it to yourself 6 times until you write the next one, and sometimes you, like, read, and it's not like I won't take breaks in between, like, verses. Like, if I've written a whole song, I've rehearsed that whole song every time I've written a new line to it, and you just bash yourself so hard. It's like, that's stupid. Why would you write that? That's so dumb. Why won't that syllable fit? Why is your cadence off? This is ridiculous. Why can't you breathe here? put a breathing point in there. What are you doing? But at the end of it, you feel battered, but I also feel like a warrior is like, yes, I've got this project that I've created, I've memorized entirely, and I know it doesn't completely suck because I didn't allow myself to let it suck while I was writing it.
Yeah, so it's like a gladiatorial situation where you just kind of like throw yourself in there and wait until you're capable of bringing yourself back out when you have a finished product.
It's like Andy Dufresne in Shawshank Redemption. Sometimes you gotta crawl through that mile of excrement before you come out fresh and clean on the other side. And that's very much what my writing style is, crawling through a mile of excrement and coming out with the perfect song.
That's a good way of looking at it. For like other kids who are listening in, what would be your advice to them? People who maybe they think of rapping at some point, but they have stage fright or they don't know even how to write or how to even begin, where to go. Like, what is some advice? I mean, you're clearly doing what you can to get out there. And I think that's a huge part of it, is just saying, this is what I'm going to do. And you do it. I mean, you said your first show you set up by yourself at your birthday party. So you just took an opportunity and capitalized to give yourself the setting you needed to evolve as a performer. So what's some advice that you can give other people who want that and don't even know where to begin?
Well, I'd say to start, if you don't know how to write and you want to start doing these things, books are knowledge, books are power. My favorite writer to read is F. Scott Fitzgerald, not because his books are necessarily amazing. You know, it's a lot of long, tedious description of things, but that really, reading things like that and Faulkner, just like these difficult books to read as a young guy, and not talking about Gatsby, but like This Side of Paradise, things like that, Beautiful and Damned. Taking those books that are very wordy and descriptive will really help you figure out your writing style. Like taking those modern classics, mixing that in with whatever hip-hop you like, and listening to every artist in the style you like that you can, along with some other genres, and just kind of constantly study. Always study the game, always study the music, always study the words, because obviously, there's a lot of ebonics that are involved and idioms that are involved with hip-hop. But the grammar not mattering so much as the words themselves. The English language is a crazy thing. The words are great. Get your Webster's on. Study the English language if you're going to rap. Do that. If you want to learn how to freestyle, a good tip to start that is, because no one ever wants to start freestyling because they're like, oh, it's just embarrassing to say something stupid. What my big brother taught me when I first started freestyling is look at something in the room. Think of a rhyming word for that quick, and then just rhyme about the stuff around you. And that worked out really well for me.
Sounds like a good exercise.
Tweet, apparently. I don't have much of a social media presence yet, but apparently you want to be on Twitter, you want to be on Instagram, you want to be on Snapchat, you want to be on all these things constantly pushing something, whether it's not it's your thoughts just tied to your name and telling them about a project. Full promotion. I guess you really want to be on the internet. I'm still working on that part.
Or you could be DJ Khaled and just rep Ciroc all the time.
You could, and tell people that you're their spirit animal. And then I guess for the anxiety thing, it's really just you have to make a decision. With everything in life, you have to make a decision. And the decision with the anxiety is, am I going to let that cripple me, or am I going to risk failure to reap rewards? And you definitely have to risk that failure. That's where you're going to catch all the L's you don't try to reverse, you know? You're going to miss every shot you don't take. So with the anxiety, you just really have to try to fight through it, because as a Gemini, I'm not big into astrology, but like there's that duality of person. And I feel like there's that duality in everyone, where there's that anxiety and that very low, and there's that extremely high. And if you're an anxious person, what I can say to you is it may seem tough taking losses, but that high is just so high once you get to that point that it's worth anything you put into it.
For this mixtape, the January 4th mixtape, how did you like get into that? Like how would somebody do that? Like say they have some ideas for some songs and stuff like that. They've been working on their breathing, and then they're like, okay, mixtape time. What are we doing?
For the one day mixtape?
It doesn't have to be one day, just in general. Like how do you do that? If they could do it in one day.
If you're going to do a mixtape in one day, what you want to do is forget about any idea of song structure. Forget about any song ideas you had going in. Grab some coffee. Make sure you don't hate your producer. You're not going to be able to do that if you hate your engineer. You got to go in there, pick a beat, come up with a... we didn't think of a single song concept. The one song concept we had was this kind of corny song about, like, post-apocalyptic world, where it was like, I was like, all right, I can't think of anything to write. Give me a topic to freestyle on. And you're like, post-apocalyptic world, not necessarily zombies, though. I was like, all right, I like that spin. Everyone's doing zombies. So we did that, but it's, you gotta vibe with the day. You gotta seize it. You gotta try to keep your energy up with that. It was such a bizarre thing. Viddy said she'd never do it again as far as, like, lyricism goes. Like, she produced one for me, but she just got so tired of it. You have to really be in love with hip-hop to put together a product quickly. And you gotta kind of take your ego out of it. And you're like, well, we want to make a chronological piece that's for people and for us. You're not gonna be able to make a project in that short a time that's any good at all if you're doing it for reasons other than just, like, fun and just to see if you can.
When's DS2 coming out?
DS2, we can't call it that anymore. Yeah, Future dropped his tape. We've been working on this thing for 3 years. It was Darkroom Sessions 2 originally, but we're going to short it up to DS2. We had some District 2 reference in it from Hunger Games. So like DS2, District 2, whatever. Future drops his mixtape. Scratch that. So Darkroom Sessions 2, I'm hoping that when Tanner gets back from Las Vegas on Monday, we can go in, record 3-4 songs, and have it out by January 30th.
January 30th is the idea for DS2.
We're hoping for that. We might just drop it on Valentine's Day, though. I've been contemplating that. That might just be fun. We haven't had a holiday release. I mean, there's definitely, unless you consider Posterior Appreciation a love track, there's not really any love songs on Darkroom Sessions 2, but that'd be a fun thing to drop on Valentine's Day for all the single ladies and fellas around here.
Sure.
So, yeah, I'd actually be down with. At first we were thinking, you know, let's get out in January. We'll get two projects out this month. And it's like, well, we've been working on it for 3 years. We might as well take the extra 2 weeks to get all the tracks in we want.
Fair enough.
So, I'm thinking Valentine's Day would be a good day.
That would be pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay, so last thing.
There we go. This talking out loud helped me set that.
There we go. So, last thing. Where can people contact you? How can people get in touch with you? Is there anything you want to, like, promote?
Yeah, people can just holler out their window at me. I'm walking around the Midway a lot. But you can find me on Facebook at Greg Kiduko Pajari. You can email me, gregorypajari@gmail.com. You can hit me up on Twitter. I'm not as active on that, but I'm about to start getting on that.
Do you have
things I want to plug?
Yeah. You want to plug some things? You can plug on the radio.
Yeah, so. I do want to plug some things. Obviously, go into Dat Piff, listen to the mixtape from Your Career in Shambles, January 4th. We really did make it in one day. I've had a lot of people like, did you really make that one day? That's a little too good to be made in one day. We actually, for all the non-believers, if you look at the track names on Dat Piff, we have the time at which we started recording vocals for each track on there. So like, give me that. also, we dropped it 30 minutes after the day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we couldn't quite fit it in, but we dropped, Viddy had to get home, but we dropped it at like 12:30 a.m. January 4th. Check out January 4th, Your Current Shambles on Dat Piff. Around Valentine's Day, we'll be dropping Darkroom Sessions 2 on Dat Piff as well. That'll be free. That'll be 18 to 20 tracks. Mm-hmm. Also, if you happen to be in Austin, Texas, I'll be playing South by Southwest. A couple different sets between March 15th and March 22nd, which will be my biggest shows and venues that I've ever done. So that'd be crazy.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
So we'll be out there for that. And I'm hoping to get my Kiduko SoundCloud running with a couple of singles from the album before that show.
Cool.
So we'll be getting that out.
Do you have any clothing or anything like that yet?
I sold out the t-shirts.
I saw those t-shirts. Those are pretty good t-shirts.
Those were pretty fresh. I'm going to be making, before March, I'm going to make the Uko pronunciation t-shirts so that people will stop calling me Uko whenever they, and mainly for like the MCs that like announce people coming on stage. I'm sick of having my name announced wrong. So I'm going to give each of them one of those shirts. Yeah. Well, other than that, yeah, catch me at South by Southwest if you happen to be in Austin, Texas. And check Darkroom Sessions 2 at February, and check out January 4th now. It's 8 tracks, 3 skits. It's really fun. got a track about the Jim Jones cult. That's really nice.
Can you say KKWE, White Earth, Minnesota, 89.9 FM, Niji Radio?
KKWE, 89.9 FM, Niji Radio, White Earth, Minnesota. What's up, D-Town?
Perfect. All right. And make sure they get your name again.
Kid Uko, Greg Kajari, we're out here Midway, St. Paul, Minnesota. What's good? Since 92.
All right.
Not Uko.
Kid Uko.
January 4th, I'm going to shout out my cat Manny Pacquiao. That's it.
Thank you, Kid Uko.
Thank you.
Funding for this program has been made possible through a grant from the Legacy, Art, Culture, and Heritage Fund of Minnesota.